One of the main purposes of this series is to show the changes that have come about over the years in the Decatur area. And no one could have seen more profound changes in the course of a career than our guest today, Mr. Lauren Boatman, who is meteorologist on the news staff of WAND television channel number 17. Well, Mr. Boatman, welcome to our oral history series.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're very glad to have you. Have you always lived in Decatur?
No, I moved to Decatur in 1949, so I call myself one of the early 49ers. It hasn't been, you know, the way back early 49ers.
And you found gold here.
Yeah, almost, yes. I moved here from the University of Illinois. When I finished my master's degree, I came to Decatur in 49 and joined the staff of the brand new Lakeview High School, which opened its doors in September of 49. So I've been in Decatur that many years.
Right. And what was your, you came here to teach at Lakeview?
Yes, I came to teach at
Lakeview. What was your field of teaching?
Well, my field was science, math, and social studies. Mm-hmm. I hit all three.
Well, that was a broad background. But before we go on with that, let's go back to tell her something about your childhood.
All right. Well, I was born in Carlinville, Illinois, which is about 40 miles south of Springfield. And I grew up and was educated in the Carlinville schools all the way through high school. And then I went to school at Southern for my first year. And then I joined the Navy and got my second and third year of schooling of college at the Indiana State Teachers College. It has since been renamed, but that was located in Terre Haute. And following that, I was sent to the Northwestern Midshipman School up at Northwestern by Chicago. And I finished my training there, got my commission in the Navy, went overseas for a while, came back, and finished my senior year then at Southern. And then from there, I went to the University of Illinois to get my master's.
Where did you go overseas in your Navy?
All the Pacific.
Oh.
All of the Pacific. All over the Pacific. Mm-hmm. I was sent first to Pearl Harbor.
Oh.
And, of course, this was after the action had mm-hmm. been there. And then I was assigned to a ship at Pearl Harbor. And we went over to the Florida Islands, the Russell Islands, Guadalcanal. Those are all done mm-hmm. in that area. And then on up to Iwo Jima. And then from there, back home.
So you not only studied history, but you saw where some of it has taken
I place. Saw a lot of it taking its action right there on Iwo Jima, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you came back and finished your degree?
Finished my degree at Southern. I had 1 year to go, finished my senior year there. And then from my senior year, I taught school for 1 year in Coulterville, which is a little town in Southern Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then I got an assistantship at the University of Illinois, and I went over there and taught for 1 year at the same time I was getting my master's. And then in 1949, I graduated from the University of Illinois with a master's, and then I came to Decatur in August of 49 and started at the brand new Lakeview High School teaching there.
Well, that must have been a thrill.
And I was there until they closed the doors 33 years later.
Well then, you taught during that time.
Oh yes.
But now that wasn't, of course, it isn't your present. Well, you do teach now.
Oh yes, I have been. I suppose some people would call it moonlighting, but I have taught worked two jobs for the past 33 years. Mm-hmm. I have taught. Well, I'm starting my 40th year of teaching in 2 weeks from today. And I taught at Lakeview High School for 33 years, but it started in 49, and then in 53, they constructed the television station, and it went on the air in August the 16th of 1953. And from that point on, I've been teaching during the day and doing the weather forecasts in the evening.
Well, how did this happen? How did you have that opportunity?
Well, I was looking at the, reading the papers, keeping up on the construction of the television station, then I happened to notice that they were looking for somebody to do meteorology, do the weather programs. And I thought, why not? I took weather observations on the campus at Southern. I was a government weather observer there at the time I was there. And I thought, well, I know a little bit about the weather. I've taken courses in it. Why couldn't I do that? I stand up in front of the students in the classroom and teach. Why couldn't I stand up in front of a camera and talk?
Very good thing.
And so I went and applied and was hired.
Oh, great.
And have been there ever since with that job.
And you just made your own approach. In other words, you didn't go to a school to find out how to do the
Oh, no. Breakfast. That was my first introduction. And for weeks before we actually went on the air, we rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of dry runs on the news, weather, and sports programs so that we, when we hit the air on August the 16th of 1953, we had a feel for it.
Well, this might be a good time to tell us something about the station and the equipment and the especially changes that have come about since those early days.
Oh, a fantastic amount of change have come about, not only in the field of meteorology, but also in the equipment that's being used. Our first cameras were huge, monstrous things, and of course they've miniaturized everything since then, going from the use of tubes that they used now to just little crystals and things of that sort. So cameras have really come down in size. The lights that we used to light the studio in the early days, they were 2,000 watt incandescent lights. Now we use little tiny light bulbs that are no bigger than your finger, and they light up the studio beautifully, and they're not nearly as hot, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
We used to turn the 2,000 watt bulbs on, and 30 minutes after they were on, you kiss air conditioning
and
goodbye.
There went your makeup.
There went makeup, and you were sitting there and or standing there with perspiration, because it got very hot in the studio. Mm-hmm. Even in the winter time, those lights were hot. Mm-hmm. But now then, they're not as bad.
Mm-hmm. And the microphones?
Microphones went from the big bulky type that you set, they put on the desk in front of you, or that you carried in your hand, to the little tiny ones that are probably not now much bigger than your little fingernail.
Mm-hmm.
The size of your little finger, tip of your little finger. That's about the size of the microphones that we wear now. Only as we, if people have observed, maybe they'll notice there are two microphones on my tie clip instead of one. They always have two in case one goes out, the other is always a backup, and they will work. So we're protected that way.
Good.
We've done a lot of things to that have changed the television. Mm-hmm. The equipment itself has gone from big bulky to small miniaturization.
There's something we haven't talked about that made a tremendous difference: videotaping or even audio taping.
Right, right. That was one of the early things. And of course, in the early days, we used to do all of our commercials live, absolutely live, and we would used to have huge sheets of paper hanging in front of the television cameras where we would write out the commercials or whatever we were going to say and read it from that. Now then, we have teleprompters, we can look directly into the lens of the camera, and we have taping facilities so that if the commercial doesn't go well, we can tape it over and over until we get it right. Before, we were taping or doing it live. You made a mistake, everybody knew.
And there was such a pressure.
Oh, it was a tremendous pressure, and a pause of 5 seconds seemed like 5 minutes.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yes.
So now we have you at the television studio station, and you're set up with your equipment, and let's talk for a bit about, well, one thing we might talk before we go on with that, maybe we should talk about receiving equipment. That has changed too, hasn't it?
Oh yes, tremendous amount. And of course the broadcasting, we go up with the towers, we go with the microwave dishes that we can transmit our signal, and the receiving that we have now, if people drive by Southside Drive in front of the studio, they will notice three huge dishes there. And they receive our signal from the satellite in the sky now, instead of coming on telephone lines that we used to carry. So the whole thing is just advancing and improving so rapidly that it seems like we no longer get something in and get it installed and use it maybe a year and it's outdated because something else is coming along to replace it that's better and smaller.
Well, it really is fantastic what the engineers have been able to do for the whole field and also technicians. But let's talk now a bit about your own field of meteorology. Now that affects, it is very close to everybody, a field that everybody is interested in.
I can't think of anything that really people can get away from. It affects everybody regardless of their walk in life or their occupation. People want to know what the weather is like. And I have always tried to use my weather forecast and my weather program to inform the people, give them the straight facts, tell it like it is without a lot of fancy stuff around it. I'm pretty straightforward when it comes to doing a weather broadcast. I don't like a lot of little things on the side to distract. You know, if you got to put on a show, forget about it. I just want to get up and do the job and tell the people what they want to hear and let it go at that.
You don't try to be a comic.
Oh, no, not at all. I try not to. I try to be very serious and with the program, just the same with my part of the program, just the same anybody else I think should be.
And you tell them whether it's going to rain or not.
I tell them the way it is, yes. I got started, and as I mentioned, way back in the early part when I was at Southern Illinois University, I was taking weather reports there as a government weather observer. And it's always fascinating because meteorology is a very, very young science, and there you just can't understand all of it. It's and there's so much of it that we really don't know. When you talk about hurricanes, you talk about tornadoes and severe thunderstorms, watches and warnings, it really goes out and affects everybody, and it's just one of those things that people cannot get along without knowing what to do. So I think it's one of the most viable parts of the newscast.
Well, do you have any stories to tell us about reactions or about how things have gone?
Oh, yes. The early days, I can tell you a lot of things. People used to holler at me and say, "Hi, Mr. Boatman," and this. And then, of course, as we've gotten better acquainted, I'm just plain Boats to an awful lot of people, and that's fine. And it used to worry me on the street. People would speak to me, and I'd wonder, where did I meet that person? Then I realized, I really don't know them at all. They know me, but I don't know them. So I just say, "Hello, how are you?" and go on. But some of the things that have really happened behind the scenes in the studio during actual broadcasting of the weather, there are a lot of funny stories that have happened. One of them was when I was doing the weather, we had a gentleman out there by the name of Jay Giles, who used to be a radio announcer and news broadcaster here at WSOY. Well, he came to work at the television station, and he was doing a commercial on one side of me, on my left side, and then I would do the weather, and during the weather he would have to get down on his hands and knees and crawl in front of me and go over to my right side with the microphone to do a commercial over there. The weather was right flat up against the wall, so it couldn't go in back of me. And this one day I was doing the weather, and he was down on his hands and knees crawling in front of me when I felt a hand go up my pant leg and started to pull the hairs on my leg. It was very difficult to finish the weather with that hand there, and he finally went on, but it was one of those funny things. And Earl Hickerson, who was one of our sports directors, he was doing a commercial for an L. Bauer Chevrolet at that time. And he had his huge dog in the back of the station wagon, which was in the studio. Well, right in the middle of the commercial, the dog jumped out of the back of the station wagon, across the back seat, into the front seat with Bill Cecil, who was doing that at that time. And he started barking very loud, and there went the commercial. The next day, there was a sign posted, "There will be no live animals in the studio during live commercials," because this was the day before we taped things, and if it went wrong, we could tape it over. But this was during the live days. And Earl Hickerson, who was one of our sports directors, was doing a commercial on a special lawnmower that had a swivel front wheel to it, so you could pivot around objects very close. And he had a Coke bottle down on a piece of false grass, was doing this, and three times he tried, and three times he knocked down the bottle. So it was a funny thing there. Don Foreman, who was one of our commercial announcers, was sitting down doing a commercial for a local restaurant. It was the Redwood Restaurant at that time, and he was he had the at the table with a little vase and a flower in it, and he had the menu there, and he was looking over the menu and talking about it. Bill Cecil walked in, and at that time he thought Don was simply rehearsing, but he did not realize Don was really doing it live. And Bill walked up to the table, sat down, and said, "Well, Don, what are we going to have for dinner tonight?" And as a result, Don, with a tremendous presence of mind, I would never have been able to pull this off myself. I'd have just folded. But Don handed him the menu and said, "Bill, why don't you look at the menu over and make a selection?" And he went on as if there was nothing going on. Everybody else who saw that thought Bill was a part of it. But Bill didn't realize until after it was over that it was live. He was part of the commercial, and he collapsed then.
He did.
But we've had a lot of fun things. People have called me at all hours of the day and night. And I had one lady especially, which was rather amusing. It was shortly after we had gone on the air. I don't remember it was the first year or the second year, but in the early years, they and had announced their daughter's engagement during the Christmas season, the holiday season, and it was to be a June wedding. In January, I got a call from this lady, and she told me who she was, and I said, "Oh yes, I remember seeing the announcement in the paper of your daughter's wedding, big picture and all that." And she said, "I want to know, can you tell me, Mr. Boltman, what the weather's going to be like in June?" She said, "We're going to have an outdoor wedding, outdoor reception, and in excess of 300 people there, and I must know." I said, "I'm sorry, but if you call me about 6 days before, I could give you a pretty good idea." She said, "I can't wait that long." I said, "Well, if you've got to take out insurance, call Lloyd's of London." I don't think she's too happy with my comment. But there are a lot of amusing incidents like that that have happened.
Well, people do think you have control.
Oh, yes. I wish that I did have the control that some of them think I have, because they would be shoveling snow off their driveway the 4th of July.
Well, the field of meteorology on television has changed a bit itself, the way in which you do it. Isn't that true?
Oh, yes. Before, I used to do it very amateurish, and it was very primitive. I shouldn't use the word amateur, because we tried to be professional and everything, but it was a very primitive way of doing it. Now that we have the color graphics machine, we have radar, we have our satellites that beam us our pictures. So even though meteorology has moved a tremendous distance from the early beginnings, it's still considered a pretty much of an infant science, because there are so many things that we don't know about it, and we know things happen, but we're not sure why. And in the 33 years that I've been out there, I've seen it go from going out and reading a thermometer and measuring the rain and the rain gauge to now that we have satellite pictures, and I now use the color graphics machine, which we reproduce maps, and I make up my maps and type all this stuff and put it in nice weather or nice form for the people to see on the screen, much better than my old scribbly handwriting that I used to do.
Well, the use of percentages is out, hasn't it?
Oh, yes, the use of percentages, and then that lets people say, "Well, if he says it's going to be a 50-50 chance of rain, maybe I better take a raincoat.
Right.
If it's only a 20%, well, 80% chance says it won't get rain." So they can figure for themselves, but a lot of times they really need to do know so that they can decide whether they should carry a raincoat or an umbrella. And of course, there's all kind of things that we try to pass on to them, information like in a thunderstorm, try not to use an umbrella, especially if it has a metal rod and handle, because that will attract lightning. And don't stand under a tree, because lightning could hit the tree and jump from you the tree to you, and you're zapped. So we try to pass on all good information, people that they might not think of at the time.
Why don't you tell us how you prepare? What is your day at the studio? Well, maybe this is the time to tell about your day in general. You really have a very full day.
A very full day, yes, because I teach at the, now that I'm teaching at MacArthur High School, and of course, as we mentioned, just 2 weeks from today, I will be starting my 40th year of teaching, and next week I will start my 34th year at the television mm-hmm. station. So my day begins quite early, like 5:45 in the morning, and I'm usually at the high school by 7:30 or 7:35, somewhere in that 5-minute time frame. I teach school during the day and work and go stay after school, and usually until about 3:30, 3:45, then I head for the television station. And I always try to get there no later than 4 o'clock at the very latest, because from 4 o'clock until 6 o'clock, I am very busy gathering all the information that I use on the 6 o'clock show, and also gathering the information and putting it into the color graphics, computer color graphics machine that I use to make up the forecast pages, the maps, and we sequence all of this in the order that I want it to appear then. Mm-hmm. So it's that type of a thing. Then I usually get maybe an hour and a half break for dinner, at which time I'm usually back at the television station by 8 o'clock at night, and we're there until we finish with the 10 o'clock news, which is usually 10:35. And except on Monday nights when there's a ball game or something going on that might keep us late. So from roughly, you could say, from 6 o'clock in the morning until midnight, I'm on the go. And I get about 6 hours sleep, and I thrive on it.
And that's how many days a week?
That's 5 days,
five days a week.
And even on Saturdays and Sundays when I could sleep in, I don't. I'm so used to getting up, I'm gone again. But so basically, there are 3 months out of the year that I do the weather show on Sundays. That's just at 10 o'clock, mm-hmm. however. And I do that 3 months out of the year. So there's 6 days, weeks then.
Well, it is a demanding job.
I live by the clock.
But still a very satisfying one, I would guess.
Oh, it has to be, or I wouldn't stay with it. Both of them, in fact.
Television is so important to people in their daily lives that you must feel you have a tremendous impact upon them.
Yes, I think I do have, because people recognize me wherever I go, and it's so strange. I was over in England just this last summer, got back just about a month ago, and I met people over there and hollered, "Hi, Boats."
Oh.
And they don't live in Decatur, but they live in an area where they receive us, mm-hmm. and they recognize me. In Hawaii, it was the same thing, and down at Epcot, I walking through the grounds, and people have hollered at me, "We're from Decatur," or "We're from Mount Zion," or "We're from Springfield," or "Champaign," and the tremendous amount of people. You just can't begin to believe the effect that you have, and I'm so glad that they holler at me, because yeah. and call and speak to me, because I just think it's fabulous that even away from home, they know me, and it's just nice to meet somebody who knows you.
And all of this has happened in 30 or 40 years, right?
33 years, yes.
Well, let's see if you can tell us some of your reaction to the question about how television in general and WAND in particular has changed life in this, in general, but in Decatur in particular.
All right. One thing, as far as news is concerned, and as far as the television station concerned, television news, it puts you there when it's happening. Before, you got the audio portion with radio, and in newspapers you could read it the next day, but television puts you there now. It is there. For instance, the royal wedding that took place, we left there on Wednesday or Thursday before it the wedding took place. We came home and watched it as it was happening. And I kept speaking to my wife, Pauline. I said, "We were there. We sat in that pew at Westminster Abbey where the wedding was taking place." And it's one of those things that you see everything instantly. And it was only brought on us to really made people realize this during the wars, the Korean War and things of that sort. It's a shame it had to come into being then, but they brought the war to the people. And it showed them the savage, the brutality of it. And people could see for themselves what is going on. Mm-hmm. So it's an instant impact. And I think it has changed people's thinking a tremendous amount. But yet, at the other hand, it gives them the information immediately. And I think it will continue to do that. The thing that most news departments want, accuracy in reporting. Mm-hmm. And that is their primary purpose, is accuracy in reporting. And I think most of them do that. Mm-hmm. A very, very talented, very professional group of people.
So you think, on the whole, it's had a positive influence?
Oh, yes, definitely. It no doubt has changed a lot of sleeping habits for people, because a lot of people will stay up and watch the late night news and they'll watch the late night programs, whereas before maybe at 9:30, 10 o'clock they were clicking off mm-hmm. their radios mm-hmm. and going to bed, you know. Now when they stay up, they are being entertained. Mm-hmm. And I think that is one of the things that people like to do. We have an awful group of a lot of people who want to be entertained, and they're very passive. And I think television has been tremendous, especially in the medical field. Not only are they able to videotape operations and surgeries and things of that sort, but the fact that television has now been put in the hospitals, in the patient's room, and it's a tremendous entertainer for people who lie in the hospital mm-hmm. and are on their way to getting well, and we see them watching television, you know, it takes their mind off things, mm-hmm. and it really fills in the time for them.
Is it possible that it might be too passive in playtime?
Oh, I think a lot of times, yes, I think a lot of times parents should turn the television set off and chase their kids outside, say, go play, because a lot of times the kids will want to mm-hmm. stay inside and watch. And so sometimes I think it's up to the parents to decide how it's to be used and what is to be watched, for especially in the younger ones.
You sometimes wonder what people did before television.
Oh, yes. You know, it's a lot of people do not read like they used to, or they do not sit around and talk. People come in and into my home, if we happen to have the set on and people come in, it immediately goes off and we talk. But I know some people are really put out if you don't let them watch the show that's going on, mm-hmm. and they try to talk to you, you know, the show is, you're in second place, in the television first, and I don't think that's right with the company.
You said it changed people's sleeping habits, it changed their eating habits too, didn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yes, they now very much eat with their eyes glued to the set. Yes, very definitely. And you see all the commercials that come over on the different products that are being advertised. Oh yes, it has a tremendous impact.
So it has its pluses, and then maybe a few things we ought to watch.
Yes, indeed.
We use it.
Yes.
But on the whole, a really great asset to
us. I say it's a very positive asset. Yes, very positive.
What do you think is the future of television?
I think we're going to see smaller sets, smaller, but more instant news, even more than we are now. In other words, what I'm thinking now is our live line truck that we have, we can send our truck out with the cameras anywhere in the field. We don't have to go to a city. We can send them out into the field, as we can very well see from the reports that come in. People are aware of this, that we now have the capability. We can go down on Lake Decatur, we can go down on Lake Shelbyville, we can go over to Springfield and televise back to our station by means of our little dishes that we have, events as they're happening right then and now. Mm-hmm. And it's that type of thing that I think we'll see more of, that field reporting, instant field mm-hmm. reporting, than what we're seeing now.
What do you want to say anything about cable?
Cable television, I think it is something we just all learn to live with. Mm-hmm. Commercial television learns to live with it, because it is commercial too, cable is. So it's just another branch of television mm-hmm. that has its pluses and minuses. And
is to be used in a constructive way.
Yes, I think so. Cable is definitely one that, which I think more parents should get in and control.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what do you think about the future of Decatur as a whole? Have you enjoyed?
I've loved Decatur. It's my kind of town, if you want to put it that way. It's just the right size. You can get around in it easily. And I think the Decatur celebration that we had just a week or so ago, fantastic. It showed the people pouring out and taking parts in the event. And I'm looking forward to next year's. I think it's a very positive attitude that we are now getting about Decatur. A lot of people say there's nothing to do in Decatur. I say, you do not use your imagination. There's lots to do in Decatur. I wish I had time to do them all.
Well, what do you like to do when you have free time?
When I have free time, I do many things, really. I like to travel. I just love to travel. I take my vacations and travel someplace every year. This year we were in England and France, England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland. Year before we were in Scandinavian countries. Uh-huh. So I love to travel.
Do you act as a tour guide?
Once in a while, yes. And I love boating. A person with the name of boatman wouldn't be anything else but a boater. And my father was in the Navy. My brother was in the Navy. I was in the Navy. My younger brother was in the Navy. So we come from a Navy family or boaters. Okay. And I do have my own boat here on Lake Decatur that I use. And I thoroughly enjoy it, getting out in the boat and just moving around on Lake Decatur, not hot rodding it as some of them do. Mine is a boat that you don't go too fast in. It's just a cruiser. But I love boating and water activities. I love photography. I'm not very good at it, but I love it. Mm-hmm.